It's time for another season of The Palmetto Porch, an original podcast from Discover South Carolina. I'm Devin Whitmire. Join me as I get to the heart of what makes South Carolina such a great place to visit by speaking to the locals who make it so special. Premiering December 5th, find The Palmetto Porch wherever you get your podcasts. And for more information about our show, visit scpalmettoporch.com.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Welcome to another BritFlix.com podcast. My name's Stuart Wright, and today's guest is all the way from Switzerland. Welcome to the show, Christian Johannes Koch.
Hello. Thank you for inviting me.
So give the audience some context. Christian and I first met in 2016 at the Sources 2 script development program in the wilds of Tromsø, Norway, where it never went dark, did it?
Exactly. I think it was in June. Right? Yeah. And yeah. We were just starting I was starting the script, presenting now the movie of it.
What's the title of the movie?
It's called in German Spagat. Well, it's pronounced in the same way in a lot of other languages, but not in English. But it means, if I'm right, it means something like the splits or splits.
And how, and for those listening in 2025, when COVID's all gone, how was, and talking in the present, how was having a world premiere during a global pandemic?
It was very special, but also very nice. Well, we premiered in the new director section in San Sebastian, and under all the circumstances, it was a pleasure to be there and to show the movie in front of the public, and the theaters were full of people with all the restrictions we had, with kind of every second seat was only open for public. And I had the impression that a lot of people are quite hungry to go to cinema and to see a movie and go together and to talk about it. And this was a nice experience. It was quite interesting because I finished the movie exactly the day when Switzerland decided to do a lockdown. This was the last day this was the DCP play out moment, more or less. And I was quite of, okay, now it's over. This movie, nobody will see it anymore. And so we didn't show it to people because, we showed it to almost nobody. And then we were invited to San Sebastian, and I was kind of nervous because I realized, okay, nobody has seen this movie. It's the first time, not only, maybe a couple of people saw the movie before. And this was very exciting. Yeah.
So let's let people, if you can you do like a brief synopsis to what Spagat's all about?
Oh, well, it's very complicated. And honestly, I'm very bad in pitching. And over the whole process of making this movie, I refused in a way to pitch the movie. But yes, I can try. It's a multi-layered story, and it's centered around a high school teacher called Marina, living in the countryside of Switzerland. And she has a secret affair with Artyom. And Artyom is a so-called sans-papier in Switzerland, means he's living in Switzerland without valid resident papers. And Artem has a daughter, Uliana, and Uliana is going to school to Marina. So as you see already in this introduction, there are a lot of relationships. And at the end, it's a movie about relationships because there's a very small detail, or for almost everyone, just a small incident who is happening, and this makes... Okay, maybe I have to start again. It's really
complicated.
It's really complicated.
No, you were fine. Christian, you were fine. No. And I think you're trying not to spoil it, and that's good. Now, I'll sort of round that off. What you mean by there's a tiny incidental crime, for want of a better word, but crime's too big for what actually happens. But because of who does the crime, it has consequences way in excess of the crime itself. The crime doesn't really get anywhere because it gets resolved to the point, but already the wheels are in motion on what is going wrong in everybody's life. So the secret affair, the secret person living in Switzerland, is all exposed over the journey of this one nothing event, which happens at every high school, every day, all over the world.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, it's like a domino. I don't know if you use this word in English, but it's like a domino effect at the end. There's a small small thing starting. There's this very nice video installation from Fishley Wise years ago. Maybe you know it. The Lauf der Dinge in German.
No, go on.
Where there's one small thing starting, and this is kind of an artwork. It's lasting, I think, 20 minutes. There's a chain. And it's like, well, every movie is almost like this.
I was going to say, I mean, I recently rewatched No Country for Old Men. And that whole story, as far as Josh Brolin being in trouble, hangs on the fact that he goes back to the murder site. If he never goes back to that murder site, he's got away with $2 million. But because he doesn't want to let a man die, he has to go back and give him water. But by going back, he puts himself in the frame, which means the cartel, the police are all after him. Had he not gone back, nobody's ever chasing him. So it's like...
Well, and this is a very interesting question, I think, regarding life in general, because this Entspagat is maybe also about this question about how do we live together at the end, and what do we do in our lives, and how do we decide in lives? And at the end, also maybe for me, for myself, it was quite important that to focus on this question always. How do you decide if you have to choose between this question of law or what do you feel, or what do you...
We'll get onto that. I've got things to ask you about that later on, but let's start at the beginning. Obviously, in terms of a film is written first before it's made.
It is.
And you've got there's a second writer here. Is that Jose Sesink? Is that how I say it?
Jose Sesink, exactly.
The pair of you wrote this movie, or did one of you write it and another one then develop it, or vice versa? Or did you write it together as you the director with the writer?
We didn't know each other when we started working together, and I just came up with an exposé of 5 pages, and this was a first draft of an exposé, and then we started working. It was very interesting for me because I'm used to work very, very fast, let's say, like this. Okay, now we work and then we write, and you also had completely another way of working. We just started to talk, and we met every day in his apartment. It was a gray winter in Berlin, and we talked, and he made notes. And this was quite special for me because I was not writing anything. And I realized that, okay, thinking before writing is quite an interesting process. It's the
percolation, isn't it, in your mind?
Exactly.
Because if you spend a day talking about a story and then come back the following day, you're loaded up with what you've said, and there's new things, and then hopefully connections get made with the new things, or old things get lost because the new things are better. It's either or.
Exactly. And we had really also long, well, we had the possibility to work quite long on just this treatment process. So it was, I think, 3 months. We met.
Wow.
We met not every day, but we met quite a lot, just talking and taking notes. And for myself, it was very interesting. Before I worked a lot, that I had kind of a concept in mind. I wanted, and it was often quite theoretically also. And also my approach to making a movie was, in a way, first very theoretically. And this experience with Josa, I learned really that, okay, I'm starting to develop my story from the point of view of the characters. First, I got to learn my characters by heart. And then the story will be there. And this was a very interesting process. And as I said, 3 months of discussing and working. And then the treatment, writing down the treatment was quite easy.
So thinking about that 5 pages you wrote that led to then, instead of a script being written, you and the writer then having these conversations, how far have you deviated from that original 5 pages in terms of what we get to see now as the film?
Honestly, it's very close.
Seriously?
Yes. Well, not in terms of plot, because the plot changed a lot, but in terms of the characters and in terms of the mood and of the main topic of the movie, it's almost the same. I just read it 3 days ago, so I was very surprised.
It's good, because I think I've kind of begun to learn the power of getting to know your characters better than getting to know your story. Because if you know your characters, you can literally put them anywhere. Then, if you know who they are, you can say, well, what would this character do if they're on a spaceship? If they're driving a tractor? If they're buying a jumper? Suddenly, you can say, well, they do this. This is what they do. This is who. Like, as much as you could say, this is what I would do.
Yeah,
it's almost like having inventing a relative or a best friend or somebody you hate.
Yeah, exactly. And for me, it was also interesting because, well, I have a visual background, let's say like this. I studied photography, and I think first I was always thinking about pictures, and I had to learn that, okay, writing a movie is not thinking about pictures. It's for myself. It's not. It's something about thinking about my characters, and especially loving each character, or get to love each character during this process. And, and this was one of, yeah, it was kind of a huge, I realized something during this process who helped me a lot then in writing the script and working with the actors, etc., etc.
So when you came to writing the script, and so therefore, I mean, because that's where I think it's great that you were kind of held off from sort of writing the script, because I've had the opposite, which is I'm the one that's chomping at the bit to try and get final draft open and start making a script, whereas the director I've been working with, he's the one that makes me talk to him, bizarrely. It's like that kind of, I think it's almost like, what do you call it? It's like, for me, I always feel like there's like a Calvinist work ethic, which is this idea of doing the work, whereas talking doesn't feel like doing work. Whereas actually, if you can talk about it, you're doing a lot of work, but you're not feeling, it doesn't feel like work because you're just discussing. But obviously discussing with two people is the same thing you'd have to do in your head if you were sat at the computer typing. And it's much easier for two people to go, well, why would they do that? On your own, you go bloody mad doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. And we did really spend a lot of time in discussing and then writing a plot outline and then writing the script, the first draft. It took me 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Or even not 3 weeks.
It took me a month recently where we'd done the talking and you get to the thing and it took me a month. You're like, right, okay, now I understand. This is this is productive. It's actually productive to not do anything.
Yeah. Well, this is a big question in general on what does it mean to work, and when do you stop working and when do you start working if you're a filmmaker? So honestly, maybe I never stop working.
I think that, I mean, it's not digging coal, obviously. We're not, it's not like it's tiring in the sweat toil sense, but you can't help but react to the world with a view of what's going swimming around your head. Yeah. And if it's just, and it could just be slicing a piece of bread and you're going to go, eureka.
Exactly.
This chopping board actually could represent something. You're like, oh, right, okay.
Yeah.
And away you go.
And this is sometimes very nice and sometimes it's quite exhausting to work all the time in a way.
Yeah. Now, is it the Artem's experience as the kind of, he's not an antagonist, but he represents an antagonist force through an individual, which is the problem at the heart of the movie, as in his, and thinking of your idea of choices, his choice to come to Switzerland and live there creates the problem for his daughter, not his affair with the teacher, his adults being bad adults. And that's just, you know, that's a moral ground that you can either agree or disagree. It's not immoral or moral. It's just adults choose to do things. But at the center of this is this young girl who has made no choices, really. Everything that she's doing has been foisted upon her. Yeah. And in that sense, everything that gets paid for because of what's been chosen, it disproportionately is a disproportionate punishment for her, because she's completely unaware that, not unaware, that's the wrong word, but she's not played a part in putting herself in the predicament that means she should be punished. Because on the surface, you go, the headmistress is the kind of hero and villain of the film. But as you're at the start of the film, but then as we walk into the story, I felt like it pivoted towards the young girl.
Exactly.
Even though she's not in all the action,
yeah.
It's almost like she's a ghost in all the scenes she's not in, and then she's in a scene and you're reminded of her innocence in all of it.
Well, she's like a flipper ball in a way.
Because, okay, go on.
Well, because she's a child, and she has nothing. Justice in this way is, there is no justice regarding where you are born or which are your parents. Mm. So, and she couldn't choose anything. And well, what was your question? Would you like to know a little bit more how I came up with this idea, or? What was my point?
Well, I was going to say, but that idea of the film feels like it's one thing because it's all about the headmistress, but then slowly, as the headmistress's world, secret life opens up into actually disaffecting this one girl's life, and then does the classic thing of tries to fix the problem, but only makes matters worse. That might be just be an observation, Christian, I think. And hopefully not too spoilery. Is Artem's experience in Switzerland atypical? Is that the front of your mind? There are people living and working in Switzerland who are doing a fine job and contributing, but actually, if authorities come along, their whole situation is under jeopardy.
Well, let's say like this: I was living abroad for a long time, and every time I came back to Switzerland, I was surprised how on the surface everything seems to be fine. And and I had, during my studies at film school, I was working in Switzerland on construction fields. And I think it's a very interesting area, construction fields, because you have a lot of different people meeting, not only immigrants, only also Swiss people, but everybody is meeting there, and it's quite a bubble, let's say, in Switzerland, this world. And I was living for a couple of weeks always each year inside this bubble. And I had the impression, okay, I want to do something about this social injustice existing in Switzerland, and even existing quite a lot, but it's not visible. And of course, as in every country, you have a lot of people without a resident permit working in Switzerland and completely working for the whole society. And this I found interesting. And then there is one interesting point in Switzerland, that children without resident papers have to go to school by law. But by law, they're not allowed to be here. And this was for me kind of, okay, I couldn't explain myself, okay, how this is possible that the country decides.
That sounds insane.
Yeah, this is, well, there are different laws working against each other, let's say like this. There is a human right to get educated, and there is the law from Switzerland that you're not allowed to be here. And this I found very interesting. And so I started to make research around this.
From a moral rather than legal point of view, if you were talking to your average Swiss Joe or Joanna, what's worse, the affair between a married woman, the married woman having an affair, or the head teacher hiding an illegal immigrant, as it were? Which would be seen as worse?
I can't say that because I'm not judging at all. For myself, there's no problem in having an affair. It's more the problem how you deal with that. At the same time, it's not, for myself, there's no problem to hiding someone and to help someone. But
I don't mean for you to judge it, like for you to say, no, I think having an affair is right or wrong, or I'm just saying, but thinking generally, if I was to pick up a tabloid newspaper in Switzerland tomorrow, is it going to be more shocked about headmasters having affairs and breaking families up, or headmasters harboring illegal immigrants and trying to keep them in Switzerland?
Well, the second one, I think, hiding someone, yeah. This is something nobody's talking about it, but well, you can't live in a society without help. So, of course you need people who help you through the day. And well, my question is more how it's possible that we have a system where you're allowed to be here or you're not allowed to be here, because we are creating this system, nobody else. So we have we have standards, and we establish the standards in Switzerland, especially because we have the right to vote always, all the time, on everything. So the whole law at the end is made by us.
Yeah, there's a happy accident, isn't there, at birth, that I've got because I'm in the UK, that somebody coming to the UK who could offer some skills or just wants a better life for themselves is frowned upon by a certain part of the country, is legally prohibited because the law says if you don't have this paper or that paper, or your passport isn't got that many months left to run, then you can't be here. But yet you can earn money and pay taxes.
Yeah.
So you can pay into a system that says you can't legally be here.
Yeah.
And like I don't know if it's the same in Britain, but certainly that example of the child has a human right to an education. So even though the child has no legal right to be here, it's illegal to not send them to school.
Exactly. Well, and at the end, I don't have an answer on all these questions because I think they are so huge, but I think it's important to discuss.
No, I think that, like I was going to say, I think that's, it's probably important saying, because obviously you've made the film, but having seen the film isn't trying to answer these problems at all. You throw up all the questions and all the doubt and all the absurdity that these issues raise through what is the story of someone who's doing well for herself. She's doing everything right. The Liana is putting in, she's got extracurricular activities, she's a positive kid and everything. And then through no fault of her own and the absurdity of the way the law works in relation to her dad's right to be in Switzerland, her life is also thrown on its head as well.
Of course, we all depend in a way on our parents. And I thought it was
on the flip side of that, you've got Mariana, the headmistress's life, which is she's got a kid relatively the same age as Juliana. And what you also see there is the privilege of born with different rights. In, you know, obviously, being born in Switzerland gives you a lot of rights. And you can tell that she, And it's not a crime. She takes it for granted, because why wouldn't you? It's what you're born to.
Absolutely.
And you can see that her going out, smoking fags and having a drink is neither here nor there, because that's called coming of age.
Yeah, and this similarity, two things happening at the same time, but this like reality, two different realities happening at the same time, all the time. This is, I think, this is happening everywhere on the world. This is like our destiny as human beings in our world. But at the same time, it's also interesting because it maybe cinema or film is the only way of communication who can express this in an interesting way.
Yeah, it reminded me of Rust and Bone. You know, the Belgian French movie. Again, it's that idea of legal rights, legal thing, and then how you go about living your life. And all you're wanting to do is make life better for your kid. It's really not about wanting to take anything. And let's be honest, the guys working in that quarry at the center of your film are not doing a fun job.
Of course not.
On holiday.
Of course not. Of course not.
You know, this is.
But you know, my aim was never to do a movie about illegal migrants in Switzerland. This movie, I think this movie is talking much more about us, about the Swiss society, than about the life of an illegal migrant in Switzerland. Mm. Even this is part of the story, but in a way, it's talking much more about how we live together and how we handle our privileges and how we protect privileges.
I think that's obvious from your, because obviously you're Swiss and you can see it from a Swiss point of view. Whereas there's a double whammy for me watching it as a Brit, is I don't know too much about Switzerland, so to then see ultimately a similar debate that goes on here, you know, in Britain, it was Polish people, Lithuanian people, you know, being plumbers and then not welcome all of a sudden, you know, like a flick of a switch, suddenly it became a joke, you know, like a standing joke that was based in xenophobia.
Yeah.
Aimed at Polish plumbers for a short while, you know, and it's like, where's that come from? And then that isn't even in the instance of like where you've got, that was where they had the right to be here. That was just to do with just plain old xenophobia, never mind legal or illegal. I should say it comes across really strongly, the comments you're making on Swiss society as well as Artem and his daughter's situation, because that's almost like a catalyst to reflect back on how normal it is for Swiss families. While at the same time, you're just living your life and la, 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 la. There are people moving from flat to flat, secret moving at night and life thrown in its head, and you don't know about it. It doesn't bother you, doesn't worry you. You don't have to think about it. Yet, obviously, Marina, as a character, ends up being the eyes and ears of all Switzerland, as it were, because she gets to see the reality of the minor crime that is the domino effect throughout the movie.
Yeah.
She follows it for us.
Well, and even
the husband doesn't care.
Yeah, and even if she knows the situation her lover is living with his daughter, but, well, she knows it, but she can't identify in a way. And as you mentioned before, I think, okay, it's based in Switzerland. It's talking about also Swiss society, but I think the story at the end is quite universal because it can happen everywhere.
There was a film a while ago, a British film called Dirty Pretty Things, which was about that whole nighttime economy in Britain. And you had like, you know, a Nigerian doctor who's having to drive a cab because that's the only job he can get, even though he's qualified as a doctor.
Yeah.
You know, it's like it's...
Because our life is just quite paper orientated. This is...
And if you think about, if you flip it around like you're doing with this idea of how do Swiss people see it, if they see it at all, is that all we are bothered about as people that have got solid rights to be in a country is, did the taxi turn up on time? It did. I don't care where the driver's from. That doesn't enter your head. Or did the building get built? Did the quarry get blown up and
gravel supplied
to whatever? We're not worrying about who that does. You get there's an economy that exists that relies on the likes of Artem to come to Switzerland for 6 years, isn't it, in the story? It's like he's been there 6 years. So by any kind of normal rights, he could consider himself a local. You know, you live anywhere for 6 years in the 21st century. You've kind of put roots down, haven't you? Most, you know, people are moving much quicker than every 6 years. Thinking of the practicalities of your film, obviously you've got a central star in a film who's a gymnast, which is beyond the usual call of what an actor needs to do. How did you cast the role of Uliana? How did you go about that process?
Oh, this was quite difficult because, for everybody who doesn't know Swiss German, this is a language not a lot of people are speaking. And I decided I want to do it in Swiss German. There were other possibilities like in French, but I decided, no, this is really, it's centered in the heart of Switzerland, so it has to be Swiss German. And, I had to look for a girl in the between 10 and 14 years old, able to be, to be a good actress, first of all, then a good gymnast, then speaking Swiss German and speaking Russian. And very quick, I realized after the first two casting rounds, okay, we don't have a lot of Russian-speaking girls who are also good gymnasts and they're now also good actresses. And so we decided.
I don't think many countries do, if I'm honest with you.
Well, at least the Russian and the gymnastic part you have maybe in Russia or in other Russian-speaking countries a little bit more. Well, then we decided, okay, we open it up to different languages. We had, to have just a little bit a wider area. We can look for it. And we did a lot of castings. We cast around 400 girls over 1.5 years.
Wow.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes. So doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
It's time for another season of The Palmetto Porch, an original podcast from Discover South Carolina. I'm Devin Whitmire. Join me as I get to the heart of what makes South Carolina such a great place to visit by speaking to the locals who make it so special. Premiering December 5th, find The Palmetto Porch wherever you get your podcasts. And for more information about our show, visit scpalmettoporch.com.
And then I met Masha. But honestly, it was not the first time I met her. Well, the girl who's playing Uliana in the movie now. Because I met her already in the first casting round. But she was just she was just too young. She was at the time she was 11 and very, very shy. And I didn't realized that she was there in the first casting round. And so 1.5 years after, I met her again. And then it was clear, okay, we go with you. But I also knew quite quick that we have to do a lot of work on the acting level because she never played something. And for myself, it's something too very important if you work with young adults or children that you... you do really a training process with them. Not in the way that you rehearse the scene 100 times, no, not at all, but because she had to transform completely another character. She's absolutely not the character you see in the movie in the everyday life.
Okay.
Absolutely not. And this was an interesting work then we did over a month.
Well, I suppose every director's got that responsibility, haven't they, when they work with young adults, certainly children, you know, when under 18, is that you've got to build trust in them that they're good enough to do what they're doing, not do what you say, but it's like a kind of, it's almost like a conduit, isn't it, where you're trying to go, I believe in you, do what I believe in, but don't do what I say, kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's like you still want a performance that has a naturalistic element to it, don't you? You don't want it to be like left foot, right foot, left arm, right arm, turn head, you know, just following block, you know, where the block it is. You want someone who can come alive as the character of Ileana, don't you?
Yeah, but usually you're just cast, well, in my experience, usually you cast children who are quite close to the character they play. But with Masha, we had just a situation that she lives completely another life. And she had, before that, no connection, not at all, to this reality of Ileana. So we had to build this up. And we did this with a lot of we created kind of a toolbox for her, in a way.
Mm.
A toolbox to get in touch with emotions. And we talked a lot, in a way, about Ukraine and about the city in Ukraine. She was never there, but I think she knows the city now much better than maybe people even living there.
And what do you think when you see the film now and think about what was on the page, what do you think she brought to the character that you weren't able to imagine that she brought, and you're like, yeah, that's Ileana, you know, turned right up to full.
Well, it was very interesting because she changed a lot from the paper to the result now, or the character changed a lot through her, because my character was much more, it was a girl who was very impulsive. And the child we have now is quite calm, in a way, and maybe a little bit, how you say this,
introverted,
exactly. And I realized something that was quite interesting working with her. She's coming from gymnastics, and she's coming from sports, and she was doing these sports for years, and though she was very focused, and gave something to the character I didn't imagine, this
sports people are known for being single-minded, because their pursuit is of excellence, so they have to do, they're always about the 1% improvement. And if you can improve the left ankle 1%, the knee 1%, the hip 1%, you've gained 3%. But you can't just do all 3% in one point. And then that pursuit of excellence gives you a character who can be focused on your pursuit of excellence, which is the character. So I guess if you bring that mindset from sport into acting, then they're good attributes, aren't they?
Yeah, but it was not only on the acting level. It was also on the level how she created her character. Because I think this focus was always on being and staying in Switzerland, and I think you feel this. You feel this, but I knew that it's coming from her sports side. So maybe this makes sense.
Marina and her family life is obviously a very opposite view, a very opposite vision of what family life can be like, which is it's very assured. It's not going to be disrupted. But in the same sense, against that backdrop, you give us a husband who appears to be just coasting emotionally and all kind, you know, he could find out. I mean, I think a bomb could have gone off, and he don't think he'd have moved, because he's so sort of entrenched in his ways of being. It's not like he's against anything, but it was an interesting contrast that you have. He's married to this woman, Marina, who is having a happy life at home that she orchestrates. She's a successful woman in her own right as a career, and she's having an affair with this man that she clearly loves. And yet the husband she's married to couldn't be any more opposite. It's a really interesting concoction you've got there.
Well, honestly, it's very interesting because people are reacting quite diverse to Jörg, the husband. So everybody sees a little bit something different in this character. For myself, I had just one plan. I wanted to change gender roles, the stereotypic gender roles, in a way that, well, usually I think you would have a man having a family and having an affair, and the woman would just, well, let's say in the movies from the 50s or the 60s, would it be like this? And I wanted to change this. So Jörg is now really the husband at home.
You're saying he's like the putter, the old-fashioned view would be the put-upon wife who just puts up with everything.
In a way,
he's
yes.
He's the put-upon husband.
Yeah, in a way.
Okay. No, it makes sense now.
In a way, yes. And also, I think he's very insecure in a way, and so his family is everything, and he's trying to hold his family together, and yeah, I found it interesting to give this to characterize this man with this, who's usually something you would more be linked to a woman, and
well, thinking of that, then you being a fella. Sort of then developing a character like Marina, how did you find that sort of growing a character, a strong female character like that? How did you find that process? And again, thinking of what Rachel playing the role, what did she bring to Marina that you couldn't have imagined on the page, which sort of took it further along for you?
This is a question I'm asked quite often, and I'm a little bit surprised because I think, well, I'm surrounded by women and I was raised by women. So, of course, I have connection to women, even I'm not a woman. But what I'm working like this, that after a certain point, my script is open and I'm looking for a lot of advices. And Rachel brought a lot of things into the script from herself, and this is also a thing, maybe a point every actor has to know. If he's working with me, he can't be just an actor. He has to play a little bit also really himself or herself, and this is maybe not for everybody the right thing, but she brought a lot of things in. Maybe it's also, I have to say that first I did cast someone else for this teacher. Marina was another actress, and then I met Rachel and was clear, okay, I have to change everything. Yeah. And then we started really a long conversation around Marina, and yeah, being also because the character and Rachel, they are almost in the same age, so she could put a lot of experiences from herself inside the role.
The kind of active character that she is, I really enjoyed how she set the dominoes going and then runs around, not literally, but in terms of her actions, runs around trying to fix everything, almost like trying to put fires out. And the more she runs, the more she causes. It's like if she'd have done nothing would have happened.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, apart from whether her husband would have stayed with her or not is the only debate you could have had. But instead, and I guess that comes from the idea of a teacher is a very kind of, as a profession, is someone who is in control. You control groups of children and stuff. That's kind of your responsibility. People look to you to offer them guidance and leadership. So her instincts as a character, which is really fulfilled in the film, is that she takes that everywhere she goes. He's like, no, I can help. No, listen to me. Do this, do that. And it does, and it run, even run, but eventually, obviously, because she can't hold the world in her arms, it does run away from her. And then life begins to go beyond what Marina can or can't influence.
Yeah. And the interesting thing also was in the developing process of the script and then in the financing process especially, that a lot of people mentioned that they don't like Marina. And this movie could not be made because you have a central character who's really not nice, let's say like this. And I was always surprised because, well, I'm not doing a movie about a nice person. I'm doing a movie about the person like we are, everybody more than less, that we have different needs and desires. And she has maybe this side, you're more with her, but she has also this side. Maybe you don't like this side of her, but all right. But I realized that a lot of people think that women characters have to be nice. And honestly, I think it's completely bullshit.
Yeah, no, I agree. I've had similar feedback on stuff before. It's an interesting blind spot that men and women have got. I don't think it's exclusively like men just go, I can't like female characters that are complex and nuanced. It seems to be everybody, because we're so schooled in what gender does what on screen. The minute we read something that doesn't feel the same, it sort of feels we're already in conflict. In terms of the look and feel of your film, Christian, what was your conversation like with Timon? Is it Schnappi?
Schnappi, yes.
Your cinematographer. What conversation did you have there? Because obviously you've shot this in Switzerland, so it's a place you know. But what were the pair of you concocting to give us on the screen? What were your references? What were you trying to encourage him to do in that sense?
Well, this was very interesting because Timon and I, we met at film school in Germany. So for both of us, it was the first film in Switzerland, even we are both fifth. And we met years ago, but we didn't work together during the whole studies. We didn't work together. And then, well, I decided, okay, now I will do this move in Switzerland. And I called Timon and asked him if he would do the DOP. And it was a very interesting process because we both had to learn from another side to look at this country. And we were used to work in Germany, and now we were in Switzerland, and it's different to work here. Also, the whole movie business is functioning in another way. So this was, first of all, very interesting, beside of the process. And then we started, we decided that, okay, we will kind of do shot lists of each scene and without a lot of references. The only thing we asked in every picture and in every scene was, which one is the perspective? The whole camera work is in this movie, from my point of view, is about perspectives. In every single scene. And references, I had some general references as well. I think Bergman was an inspiration for all my work, so he was also here, but not a single movie. Then we had, it was a visual discussion, because I started to make mood boards, a lot of mood boards, but from photography. But it was never really a discussion about other movies.
What did you learn about Switzerland then, to look at Switzerland as a filmmaker, not as a resident?
You mean now on the country or on the film scene?
not in any political sense, but as a visual artist making films.
Oh, it's where
you turn around and sort of look at the country you've grown up in and go, right, what does this look like as a film? What have you seen in Switzerland that you wouldn't have seen before making this movie?
Well, what I realized first of all was that it's really complicated to make a picture in Switzerland, because everything is finished. It's done. So you don't, well, we made always a joke. Well, in Germany, if you want to film a house on the street, then you have just a street and you have a house. And in Switzerland, if you film a house in the street, you have the house, the street, and then you have there a little thing and there a little thing. And this one is green and this one is red and this one is yellow. And then you have, well, it's just, it's chaotic in a way, but it's also finished in a way. And this is also, this was at the beginning, and I think also this was one of the decisions I made after this experience, that I decided, okay, you see Switzerland only, really the Swiss picture you're used with, you see only at the beginning in the first shot, and then you don't see it anymore. Mm. And most of the film is focused on environments in terms of rooms and faces.
It's quite an intimate, claustrophobic film, peppered with sort of like the, you know, the scene, say, for example, when we go to the quarry.
Yeah.
That's the first time I realized, Jesus, I've spent a lot of time indoors here.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, because suddenly I felt like it expanded again. You know, you let me breathe for a second.
Yes, and I don't want to say that this was just a decision because I didn't know how to film Switzerland, but I think I was thinking about, okay, how I show Switzerland, and I realized that I don't want to show. Mm. I want to show the people in Switzerland and not just the country.
No, I get what you're saying. You don't want to make a tourist video. The film you're making is about people in Switzerland, not about what Switzerland looks like. But I just think it's interesting just to sort of, I was interviewing an English filmmaker yesterday for a film called Say Your Prayers, and he shot it in a small English village, very sort of, you know, pre-industrial revolution in a post-industrial Britain. You know, it's like, yeah, it's old world, but it's in a modern world. And it's very easy to see that as an English person and go, well, that's what England looks like. But it's different to try and see that and make it, frame it, to look at it from a film's point of view, because you put people in it and you're trying to do something with the people you put on screen, not go, oh, look, there's a ye olde sweet shop. Oh, look, there's a Ford Mondeo or whatever, you know, like as if there's a normal English street. Doesn't matter. It's like it's using using Switzerland as a background for what you want your story to do, and not worry about how much of Switzerland you show.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think in general, it's very interesting to think as a filmmaker about how does the environment reflect on your story and your characters, and, well, what do you choose at the end to show and not to show, especially in countries, well, like you mentioned, this area in Britain, but also like Switzerland, where a lot of people have very, very made pictures of how Switzerland looks like. And I wanted to play with that in one picture at the beginning, but then you don't see it anymore. And I think a lot of people are forgetting a little bit, is it now Switzerland or is it not Switzerland? Because have never...
There's no cuckoo clocks. It can't be Switzerland.
Exactly.
where's the fondue? What's going on? So we've talked about developing it. We've talked about the characters. We've talked about what you were trying to get to, the look and feel of it. So when you've shot this movie and you went into the edit, what did you discover about the story that wasn't there on the page and during the shoot that sort of you felt you could manipulate and engineer through the edit?
May I say something before? Because there's one
Because
there's one point we didn't discuss because you can't understand it. Only people who speak Swiss German can understand it. But what we did was a huge work on the spoken words and the dialect.
Okay.
Because we have a problem you have a problem when you're working on Swiss German. This is not a written language. And so we write our script in German. And then there is a dialogue writer who takes the dialogues and writes them in Swiss German. And I always thought, come on, guys, this sounds not nice. It sounds not real. This is really not how people are speaking. And so what we did was we had 2 months. We met and we adapted each sentence to the character, to each character, exactly in the way they would speak. And I learned also a little bit to adapt their dialect. So it was really a huge work. But of course, everybody outside from Switzerland or from knowing Swiss German can't realize that. But it was just important to mention it.
No, it's important to mention it. And now I've got to ask you a follow-up question now then. So if that's not a written, you said it's not a written language.
Yeah.
So when you're at school, what do you study?
Well,
German.
Well, in the first 2 or 3 years, you're speaking in Swiss German mostly of the time, but then you're speaking German. It's a dialect. It's not a language. It's really a dialect, but a very heavy dialect compared to German dialects. Yeah.
So it's like French, Canadian, and French. It's like it sounds a lot.
No, it's more. It's far away, I think.
Oh right, okay. Yeah. So there wasn't. So in sense that work that you were doing, changing the German script to Swiss German colloquial, was actually a huge shift in the words on the page.
Yes. But the only thing I didn't do was I didn't translate it in a written form because I realized it makes no sense. And so we did it only in an oral way in exchange with all the actors. And this was very interesting. Yeah.
No, that's an immensely complex thing to have to comprehend in what is already a kind of complex thing, which is the ebb and flow of emotions. You're trying to concoct that on the page, and then somebody says, right, now what I want you to do is is this almost like technical language thing to make it fit Switzerland? And you're like, fucking hell.
Yeah. And to your other question, what is exactly? I don't remember.
So what did the story reveal to you in the edit that wasn't obvious when you were writing and shooting it? So how did you have to how much did you engineer with the story with what you'd shot and what you thought was possible that wasn't possible beforehand?
Well, maybe you have to know that when I start shooting, I'm completely forgetting the script. This is not so easy for the whole crew, but for myself, it's very nice because I'm adapting the story during shooting. And
okay.
I'm
also, so what does that mean? When you say forget the script, what does that mean?
Well, we have the schedule of all the scenes we will shoot over the next 3 months and et cetera.
Okay. So that's normal.
That's normal, exactly. But I'm not reading the script anymore. And I'm changing during the takes, the sentences. And I'm writing also other scenes and deleting other scenes from the script during shooting. So this is, for me, from the first day on, a new process is starting. And this is the process of creating part two.
Are you
part
shooting,
two.
In that sense then, I was going to say, in that sense then, are you shooting linear then?
Well, I try.
Are you shooting from page 1 to page 90?
No, not. It's not possible in all the cases, but I try it. So it's maybe half
or
two-thirds. It's shot more than less linear, yes.
Yeah, so what you're saying is you're comfortable with what you've got, and then as you move, you feel you can feel instinctively that this scene needs to change, or that scene needs to go, or that scene needs... We need a scene outside with the car because this feels disjointed or whatever.
Yeah.
You're happy to... Your producer must love you.
Yes, most of the time. No, well, so my script and community loves me, really.
I was going to say, yeah. So with that kind of devil play going on during the process of production where... Everyone goes, right, we've got a script. We've got it. We've got all the call sheets for the complete 3-month schedule. What's Christian done again? Okay. So then when the editor gets it, what's the editor's reference point then? And what's your conversation with the editor? And what are you finding about the story then?
Well,
that enhances what you were already doing, I suppose, then.
Well, my editor he started editing on more or less the time we started shooting. And this was quite interesting because we didn't have any exchange during this time. We had the agreement then when he feels something who has to be changed or really he has a big inspiration, then he has to call me. And if this is not happening, if he's really happy with what he's receiving, then he don't call me. He was in Berlin. I was.
So your expectation was, scene 1 goes to scene 2, goes to scene 3, goes to 4, 5, 6, and so on.
Well, this was...
Unless he says to you, it's not... Scene 7 doesn't land after scene 6. or whatever.
This was just, well, the first plan was make an assembly edit with all the scenes from 1 to 100 and I don't know what. Were quite a lot of scenes because the assembly was around 4 hours. And
wow.
And well, it's my first feature, so I was quite shocked after seeing this first edit. And then this is also maybe...
Can I ask you a question at that point then?
Yeah, please.
I've heard it said from the old hacks in Hollywood, they've used the horrible term, it's the suicide cut, because it's like the directors look at it and go, oh my God, there's not a film. What are we going to do? Did you get that feeling?
Yeah, in a way. Well, no, but let's say like this, the first assembly edit, I was not so shocked because I thought, okay, it's just like this. But then I think this period, just when I'm entering in the editing room for the first days, it's quite tough because you get to know your material in another way and you have to decide, okay, I kill all my darlings just for the story. And this was tough. And also to realize that what was written on paper regarding this multi-layered story was easy to have on paper. People followed this switch from one scene and one universe to the other. But when you look at it, sometimes it didn't work at all because the time was not enough to get attached to the character. And so this was difficult and to handle. But so we started editing and then I decided, okay, let's do a break. And I was very lucky because my editor became father for the second time. So we had a 7-week break and this was genius. And after that, everything was clear how we will do it. Yeah.
So as a final question then, thinking of it being your first feature film and Christian who went into the shoot knowing everything Christian knows, and Christian sat here now talking to me knowing a lot more than what he knew then, what, say, two lessons learned from what you thought you knew and what you do know could you pass on to a listener who's maybe on the brink of shooting their first film?
Okay, lesson one I learned, and I think I will do it from now on for always, is work with your actors in the script on the basis of the script already and let them give all your inspiration and let them be part as a writer in a way, even if they're not writer. So, but this is understandable, but this is for me very important.
Yeah.
Because they have.
So you're kind of saying listen. You're kind of saying listen and listen to them and trust them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And second lesson I learned: mix professional actors, non-professional actors, superstars, and children. Because sometimes it's magical what they do together. I had this experience now.
Well, look, congratulations on the film. I'm very chuffed to have got to see it, having been witness to it at such an early stage. It's nice to be putting a full stop on it from my understanding of the journey. But obviously, you've got the release of it to come in 2021. So Britflix wishes you best of luck.
Thank you. Thank you a lot for having me on your podcast.
Hey y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.